Hey, everybody. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate you joining us again on this Wednesday as we continue through the Gospel of Luke. We are in the last stages here of Luke. We have seen Jesus on the cross. Today, Luke finishes that story. Some interesting stuff. You know, again, if you are a Bible person, if you've been in church, if you've done a bunch of Easters and Good Fridays, you know that each gospel has its own collection of details and nuances in regard to the crucifixion story and to the resurrection story. We'll try to point those out as we go through Luke's version. But we find ourselves in verse 44 in a section called the death of Jesus, which I think is self-explanatory. Luke says, "It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, while the sun's light failed. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, crying with a loud voice, said, 'Father, into your hands I commend my spirit.' Having said this, he breathed his last. When the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God and said, 'Certainly this man was innocent.' And when all the crowds who had gathered there for the spectacle saw what had taken place, they returned home, beating their breasts. But all his acquaintances, including the women who followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance, watching these things." Luke doesn't do anything wildly different in his story. We get told this. The idea of darkness is important. Theologically, some people have suggested, and this is a theme in more than one of the Gospels, that this is essentially, the image here is almost like God can't bear to watch. I don't know if that's reading too much in. It could just be a symbol for the darkness that is what the human being is doing to the Messiah here. But it covered, you notice, the whole land. And while the sun's light failed, the curtain of the temple is torn in two. This is a large, heavy, thick curtain that separates the general temple from the holy area that was reserved for the high priest. And in Matthew, it says that that was ripped from top to bottom, indicating kind of that God did it. Here, Luke just gives us the detail that it was ripped. Probably what this represents, generally it's thought that this means that the barrier between what is considered the holiness and sacredness of God and people has been torn, has been eradicated, that God is now loose in the world, that there is no more barrier between God and his people. And then we have here, Jesus cries with a loud voice. The third thing he says, I mentioned this yesterday, there are seven things Jesus says from the cross. Actually, three of them are in Luke. "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." And then he breathed his last. So again, Michael, you pointed this out yesterday in that text. Very interesting. You know, it takes Luke, what do we have here? Three verses to tell this whole story. And yet, because of the way he tells it, he gets a lot across. I mean, he does a lot with not a lot of words here.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the breadth of that, Clint. And I think that that's a really important thing to do as we go through a study slowly, is to realize that now we've looked at five verses here today, and yet in these five verses, Luke has told the whole story. You have the setting, which is about noon, a kind of looseness in the time of day. What you need to know is not the time of day, but the fact that it should have been light, and it's at that moment when darkness comes over the land. So for this entire time, for 3 hours, it's going to be dark. We're not told why this is the case, but then you have the curtain temple torn, this theological, symbolic, typological action that happens. The thing that would be the separator between the Gentiles and the people, between God and the people, but there's so much symbolism and theology in the temple that the idea that the order of the temple is now been changed because of what's happening on the cross. And then details, Clint, that might to us not immediately strike us, but here we have in very explicit wording, Luke says, verse 46, Jesus cries out with a loud voice. And, you know, the commentators point out, and I think it's a helpful thing to remember, that at the end of a crucifixion, generally a person would not have any voice at all. That by nature of that form of death, that one is going to have no breath. That's the way that crucifixion ultimately will kill you. And so the idea that Jesus cries out, and Luke wants us to know, it's with a loud voice, makes it clear that he is giving up his life. And it's not just that he has a voice, it's what he uses that voice to do. Into your hands I commend my spirit. He's giving to God himself. He's putting his whole faith and trust in the creator of the universe. Jesus is a righteous man, in other words. Jesus is doing an action for others that he's doing by his own will and agency, and he's doing the work that a righteous man would do. And Luke has told us all of that in just a couple verses here.
Yeah, I think you'd see that most clearly in a gospel like John, where it's literally Jesus' decision to die. But I do think Luke, in a more subtle way, is telling us in various ways that Jesus is doing what he chooses to do. Again, he is not a victim in that sense that he didn't have options, or that he got caught, or that they outfoxed him, outsmarted him. Jesus has put himself here for this express purpose. And he now, recognizing at the end, lets go. He gives in and commits his spirit to God. And then let's talk about the reaction here. So these are those things that you can read, and sometimes from our perspective, we don't always understand what they mean. When the centurion saw, now understand that you're about to have a Roman soldier do interpretive theological work about who Jesus is. That is most stunning in the Gospel of Mark, where he says, surely this man was the Son of God. Here he says, certainly this man was innocent. But for a Roman to recognize, for a soldier to recognize the innocence, depending how far you'd want to argue that, if he's innocent of the charges, that means he is who he said he was and who they said he was. Now, how far you take that in the mind of the centurion, I don't know. That would only be speculation. But for that to be recognized by a Roman, this is the gospel's way, Luke's way of saying, you know, the secret is out. Everyone should be able to see. When you look at Jesus, when you see this sacrifice, when you watch the forgiveness and the giving of spirit, it is something noticeable. It is something obvious. And even the crowds had gathered for the spectacle. They returned home beating their breasts. Now, maybe they got caught up. Again, we've said this, less so in Luke, are the crowds a part of the drama? But maybe they got caught up in it. Maybe they were excited by the drama of it. But here, they see that something has happened and they don't feel good about it. They go home beating their breasts. And I think it's interesting that Luke gives us that twofold reaction, Michael, but everyone who witnesses sees something that doesn't seem right to them. They begin to experience the question marks of what has happened here. What have we done?
Yet notice who's now conspicuously absent, Clint. There is no religious leaders. There's, in fact, the person remaining, and I think that the absence of the religious leaders actually becomes even more serious and more damning, actually, is the presence and recognition of the Roman soldier, right? Because we've had this whole interplay between the religious leaders ultimately capturing Jesus, then having to bring into the fold Pilate, who then brings in Herod, and then it goes back to Pilate. Pilate represents the Roman power, the Roman ability even to authorize an execution like this. And the person who stands there at the foot of the cross at Jesus's death, and Luke literally says, praises God. I mean, a term of worship, not recognizes who Jesus is, or sees anew with a new eye. No, praises God and says, certainly this man was innocent. So there's a way of saying that an open-minded Roman soldier who's practiced in the art of execution, or at least being around an execution, that soldier sees Jesus for who he is, the innocent man that he is in this moment. And it's all the more, I think, convicting upon those religious leaders who have brought Jesus to this point. I think Luke leaves the door open in a very gracious way here, actually, Clint, for the Gentiles and for the crowd. Luke wants to make it clear that Jesus is doing a thing for the sake of all of these people. And there's a way in which this is less true, I think, in like the Gospel of John, where it's more pointed towards those opponents of Jesus. But here, there's an absence of those religious leaders. There's a Roman soldier who's getting it. There's crowds who on some level understand the severity of what's happened here. And of course, then Luke wants us to know there are also the women who had followed him from Galilee, that they are at a distance. They're watching this happen as well. Jesus is surrounded by these various layers of humanity, and each are responding differently in the midst of his death, his life-giving.
Yeah, it is interesting if you think about these in terms of the groups of who have seen. The centurion praises, the people repent or grieve. That's what beating their breasts mean. And those who knew Jesus, the women and acquaintances, they were at a distance watching these things. And it gives you, without saying it, Luke has done a beautiful job of painting a scene in which Jesus is in the center, and all around him are these various reactions. And leaves open-ended the kind of the question of what happens next, which is what we'll get to tomorrow. But again, a shorter section than I think you might imagine if you were going to sit and write the death of Jesus. I mean, Luke gets all of this done in 10 verses, including yesterday's text. And it just, it's really, I think, really fantastic writing.
So I just want to point out, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, Clint. To me, as I read this, it strikes me the women who followed him from Galilee stood at a distance watching these things. Luke, being the historian that he is, Luke caring so much about women like he does, it seems to me not accidental, the connection there that I think would be reasonable to make, that Luke is telling us the authoritative witnesses to Jesus's death are these women who have been following him, which in the ancient world, this is only going to get more complicated as some of the resurrection story unfolds. But Luke is turning to people who were not the first line of criminal defense. I mean, the witnesses, you wouldn't turn to the women followers as examples of pure faith if you were following simply by cultural guidelines in the first century. And yet Luke wants us to know it's not the 12, it's not Peter he names, it's the women. And I think there's something genuinely revealing in that Luke says, no, this is the people who followed Jesus, these women who followed him all the way from Galilee, they were with him until the end. And the fact that they're named is a kind of honoring, and I think that's worth noting.
Yeah. I mean, it has been suggested, and I'm not a big believer that we have to defend the text, but it has been noted by people who want to stick up for the idea that the Bible tells accurate stories, that if you were crafting a story to try and sell the idea of Jesus, it would never occur to a first century writer to make women the primary movers and receivers of the story. So, I mean, that has been a point that some have actually used to validate the historical truth, the factualness of the story. Is why, if you were making this up, you wouldn't do it that way. You would tell a cleaner, more compelling story, that in some ways this is the oddest twist, and therefore it's often thought to add to the idea that it's accurate.
I wonder, too, if when we look at a text like this, it would be easy for us to read by it, maybe, just in terms of sheer length. And also, as people who know the story, we know Jesus died. Maybe even people who know the Easter story, who know what's going to come and wanting to get to the stuff down the road. I think we should be careful to note in a study going at the pace that we're going that these words, though they may not be many in terms of the quantity of translated English words, that we could not overstate the importance of these words in the history of Christian theology and at the center of what Christians believe that God has done in the world. When Jesus says, "Into your hands I commend my spirit," that opens for now thousands of years some of the brightest minds exploring what does it mean that the Son of God gives his spirit, and what implications does that have for those of us who are not in standing ourselves to get to do that work. And what we see happening here when a centurion, a person who doesn't have the law, a person who's not a person of Jewish faith, when the centurion sees that this man is an innocent man, then we know that Jesus is not innocent just in the eyes of those who are standing there. It's a nod to Luke wants us to know that Jesus, as an innocent man, has done something that all of the other people of the world who are not innocent couldn't have done for themselves. There's the story that we've read today that is the historical account. Luke tells that. It's brief. There's also the theological depth of meaning that is going to flow out of this as Christians come to understand what God has done in this moment. And I think that's what's so amazing about it, is it does function on many planes, but it doesn't need a lot of words to do that. It doesn't need to spend a lot of time at crucifixion, because that's just the fulcrum point upon which everything else will flow. We have all of these 22 and a half chapters before this. We have a few chapters after it, but we don't need to spend substantial time on this moment, because ultimately what God has done here is the fulcrum on which the rest of it all turns.
Yeah. Throughout the story, we've had, you know, dozens, hundreds of people who have looked at Jesus, and some of them have seen something unique, something holy, something profound. That has included women, that has included Samaritan, that has included tax collector and sinner, and now fishermen and others, and now it also includes centurion, Roman soldier, and that this man sees in Jesus an innocence that leads him to praise God. And that's, make no mistake, not a God, that's capital G God. And Luke, I think, would love that detail. Luke is very interested in laying the groundwork for the story of how Jesus' death and resurrection is for all people. And so I assume he would very much love the idea that among those who have finally seen in Jesus the work of God and the coming of the kingdom, there's even at the foot of the cross a Roman soldier. That would be a detail that I think he would appreciate very much, and he writes it really well.
And let's not forget that this innocence by the Roman is declared upon Jesus while two criminals hang on either side, which we just had in our previous study. I think the fact that Jesus is the center, surrounded by these criminals, surrounded by a crowd, surrounded by Romans, surrounded then at that farthest level by the women, we're all in that story. And I hope that you found that for yourself today. Certainly like this video if it has been interesting, or if it's helped deepen your own faith or understanding of that faith. Subscribe so that you can stay with us on studies like this through books like Luke. And we look forward to seeing you tomorrow as we turn to the burial of Jesus.
Thanks, everybody.